All right, well, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Bobby Fenton with you, Week 15 edition, primetime edition. As the Bucks go back under the lights on Sunday night, they'll take on the Saints on Sunday Night Football on NBC, coming off of a big win over the Bills, and after Monday night's game where the Cardinals lost to the Rams, finding themselves in a three-way tie for first place, not just in the NFC South, but atop the NFC. And all the teams have four games to go now. We're done with the bye weeks. We can compare apples to apples the rest of the way in. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I love this time of year so much. Like, the December run through the playoffs is when it really gets good. And, you know, for a lot of years, this part didn't really involve the Bucks all that much. But it certainly did last year. It certainly does again now. First things first, though, before you worry about anything else with playoff buys and seeding and all that, got to win the NFC South. Bucks would do that with a win over the Saints, and really they'll do it with a win in any of their final four games on Sunday night. So we'll see how all that goes. We got a lot to talk about today because we got the Bills game, which I want to get into a few things about. We look ahead to the Saints game. We got some stuff. We got Urban Meyer, you know, that whole thing, and that could potentially affect the Bucks in that Jacksonville has an open head coaching job now, which Byron Leftwich may or may not be a candidate for, all those things. I'm feeling good. I've got a nice little pump going. Did my workout this morning from Young Bull Athletics, which I highly recommend to all of you. Go to youngbullathletics.com. My good friend Gary trains my wife. He writes the programming for me. You can do it any way you want to. So if you want to actually have the workouts in person with him trained, you can do that. And that's what my wife does. Like I said, I prefer, because my schedule is a little bit different, to just have him write me the program. I just like to be told what to do. I don't like to sit there and think of what I should be doing in the gym. It's all written down for me. Boom, I do it. Good to go. And I feel great coming into the show today. And so you can check them out again, youngbullathletics.com, or just email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, and I'll put you in touch with them too. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Speaking of websites, BillCurryFord.com is the first place you should go. Even if you're not even sure you want a car, you just want to browse. Go to BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E. That'll give you an idea of what's out there. And at Bill Curry Ford, they have everything. Cars, trucks, vans, new, pre-owned, used. All of it's going to be on the website. The completely transparent online no-haggle pricing will give you the general idea that you can go to the showroom or the lot, all right there a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, and check out everything in person. If you don't want to do that, they will bring a car to you if you call them up and point out one you saw on the website, and you can test drive it all without leaving your house or your office. Same thing if you buy it, and if you already have a car from there, they'll even service it without you having to go over there and do the oil changes in your driveway and stuff like that. It's amazing what, since COVID, what they've been able to do to keep things running smoothly. So check them out. Everything's covered under the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty for the powertrain. If you have that vehicle that you bought from Bill Curry Ford, it could be 5 years from now, 8 years from now. Engine trouble, bring it in, covered. And that's the guarantee you don't get anywhere else. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Again, they spell it C-U-R-R-I-E. And thanks to them, as always, for taking care of the Free Stretch. So let's talk about this Bills game real quick before we move ahead to the Saints, because obviously, it was a lot more eventful than we wanted it to be. Bucks looked awesome in the first half. They were in complete control. The lead got up to 27-10 by the second half. And, you know, everything was clicking offensively. Fournette had the long touchdown run in the first quarter to get things going. I love Donovan Smith's downfield block on that. And, of course, the Bucks then extended it out. Mike Evans with a touchdown. Brady had a QB sneak. All that fun stuff. And it looked like it was going to be an easy day. And then, of course, things turned around in the second half, which I wasn't terribly surprised about. I mean, you don't think you're going to blow a 17-point lead. But at the same time, you also don't think you're going to win 41-3. So when the Bucks got the big lead, even after halftime, even in the third quarter, I felt like, okay, you know, almost like these basketball games where it's a game of runs. You felt like Buffalo was probably going to make a little bit of their run. They're too good not to. And it did happen. Happened more so, like, I thought it would maybe get close. I didn't think we'd actually go to overtime. And the Bucks very, very, very lucky to even get that far, as let alone win the game, because when the Bills were knocking on the door there, down 27-24, I was mortified at the potential of a touchdown. Like, I thought for sure they're going to score a touchdown here. Oh my God, we're going to lose, you know, 31-27. And if not, you know, people have been bickering back and forth on Twitter and in the media, on sports talk radio. Oh, you know, whose fault is it? The defense completely abandoned their duties in the second half. No, it's the offense's fault. They shut it down in the second half and stopped producing. And you know, both things can be true. Like, we don't have to argue about it. I mean, yes, when you get a big lead on offense, you're probably going to get a little bit less aggressive. You're probably going to try and run clock and things like that. But you still have to produce and get first downs, or else you'll be giving the ball back to the other team. And that's what the Bucs did. And so, especially late in the game, like in the fourth quarter, when the Bills, I think the Bills had gotten either one or both of their two touchdowns. Either 27-17 or 27-24, I can't remember. But the Bucs had one possession that was just awful. They ran on first down for nothing. Then on second down, I got no problem running on, you know, again, when you're in a situation like that and you're trying to eat some clock, make them use timeouts, I'm not saying you have to throw every down. So I don't have a problem with the first down run. But then they did throw on second down. But even those, you want those to be high percentage type plays, you know, something in the intermediate range, screens, whatever it is, you know, that you can move the ball a little bit. You don't need to be taking low percentage shots downfield. And they called that one second down play where Brady literally just took one step back and just lobbed it down the sideline to Gronkowski. Like a completely just playground type of play that had very little chance of working. And I had a big problem with that play call because that was just given first of all, a free down away. And second of all, stopping the clock for Buffalo. So there were some questionable things in the second half offensively. But again, the defense could have done a little bit better too. Although I applaud them for, if nothing else, that final drive. And there was a big third down there inside the 10. And that was pretty much the game right there. If the Bills score, they're going to win. If the Bucs stop them, we're going to go to overtime. And the Bucs and Carlton Davis in particular got the stop, got the pass breakup, and held on there. And then that led to the Buffalo field goal. And then the Bucs, of course, go on to win it with the overtime touchdown. That's only the second time in Bucs history, by the way, that the Buccaneers have won a game in overtime with a touchdown. They've won 18 overtime games in their history. And in 16 of them, it was with the more traditional field goal. And the other time it happened, I actually tweeted at Greg Allman and I asked him, I said, hey, how many times has the Bucs, have they won on a touchdown in OT? Because I wasn't sure how to look it up. But Pro Football Reference has a gigantic database. You can actually punch these things up pretty quickly. And the only other time was a 2012 game at Carolina, which I remember nothing about. But the Bucs actually were down 8 in that game, scored with like 10 seconds left, made the 2-point conversion, then went to overtime, got the ball first, and then scored on a Dallas Clark touchdown reception from Josh Freeman to win the game. And it's amazing, like, thinking about the things I remember and don't remember, because I've told the story many times about how I've grown up a Bucs fan. You know, my mom went to the 79 NFC Championship game with me in utero. I would be born in the summer of 1980, and I've been a Bucs fan ever since. And I can tell you, like, in ridiculous detail, things that happened from Buck games in, like, the late 80s and all through the 90s and early 2000s. Like, I remember everything, all of that. And that was 20, 30 years ago. And yet, the 2012 game, like, the last 10 years since I, like, had kids and stuff, like, I can't even remember what happened 2 weeks ago now. I still remember the 90s and the 80s, though. Like, that's, like, picture-perfect memory. But even after I went and watched highlights of that 2012 game with the other overtime touchdown, I didn't remember anything. But it's only the second time. So great to see Breshad Perriman get the job done and the Bucs offense. I have to say this. I'm going to go on a mini rant here because this is a good chance to do it. It never looks good when you complain about the referees after you lost because people are just always going to say, oh, well, you're just upset that you lost, which isn't true. Even when they do lose, I feel like I have good grounds when I complain. But when we win, at least you can't say that. So I'll say it when we win. Okay? The huge pass interference call that helped set the Bucs up on that overtime drive down the left sideline to Mike Evans, and they called the Bills defender for PI, that was an atrocious, garbage pass interference call. And I know Buffalo fans are pretty upset about the officiating in general in this game. In fact, I saw a story on ProFootballTalk.com a little earlier, and apparently the Bills fans were so upset about the officiating, they actually started like a GoFundMe or something, some charity thing, and they raised $40,000 to complain about the officiating, basically. And guess where they donated the $40,000 to? They donated it to a charity for the visually impaired. just to kind of raise money for a good cause and troll the NFL officials all in one fell swoop. And I got to applaud them. I have to say it's pretty creative. And whenever you do something that results in a charity donation, that's when you put yourself like beyond reproach, right? Like no matter how, you know, sinister your intentions may have been, you can say, oh, well, we donated to charity. And they did, $40K to a charity for the visually impaired because they think they got hosed in that game. And I, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole game and which calls were which, what, and the other. But I will say I completely agree with them. And this is the rant I want to go on. Because I've been saying this for years, and I still see people on TV say it. I see announcers say it all the time. People on Twitter say it. And it's just not true. This get your head around rubbish needs to stop, okay? So for those of you that don't already know this, and you should know this if you're a football fan, but maybe you don't, okay? Whether or not you get your head around, quote unquote, that's the, always the big buzz phrase. Oh, he didn't get his head around. Well, it's PI. He didn't get his head around. Whether you or not you get your head around means nothing. You either physically commit pass interference or you don't. You can get your head around and pick the ball up and still mug the guy, and that's pass interference. And you can never turn your head. You can have no idea where the ball is at all. But if you don't actually interfere with the guy, it's not interference. There is no rule in the NFL against face guarding. You're allowed to do that. And there is nothing in the rules that says anything about getting your head around. That's just some buzz phrase. And again, I'll even hear a few, sometimes like Pereira says it on when they go to him on controversial calls on the broadcast, or you hear these guys say, oh, well, he didn't get his head around. It means nothing. And that was a well-defended ball by the Bills defender on Mike Evans. He's running right with him. He's got his eyes on the receiver because it's pretty hard to cover people in general. It's really hard if you've got your head turned the other way. So you've got your eyes on the receiver. He did not actually interfere with Evans. In fact, Evans, to his credit, and I guess you could say this is what he's supposed to do, he kind of pulled the guy in and sold the call, and the referee fell for it. And I'm not criticizing Evans for that. I mean, that's, you know, his right to try and do that. But referees have to be better with that call. And it is not easy, okay? That's one of the hardest calls in football because, one, it's bang, bang. It's not black or white like toe on the line or toe off the line. It's a very subjective thing, and it's very hard to see in real time. Like, I can watch replays all the time, and you can tell right away, oh, yeah, that was PI. Nah, that wasn't. In real time, it's really tough. So, I mean, I'm not even trying to say it's an easy call. But I really, really, really wish we could get by and that officials would move on from this whole got his head around thing, because that means absolutely nothing. Like, stop thinking that has anything to do or should have anything to do with pass interference. If your argument is, well, you know, you just said, Bobby, it's a hard call, and referees, you know, that's what they see, you might be right about that. You know, referees do kind of tend to call it more if the guy doesn't get his head around, but it doesn't mean they should, and again, it has nothing to do with the play. So, I mean, I really want to just take the phrase got his head around or didn't get his head around and just launch it into the sun. I don't even want to hear it anymore because it's stupid and it's got nothing to do with pass interference. You either interfere or you don't. It doesn't matter where your head is, okay? He did not interfere. If he had turned around and picked up the ball but give the guy a forearm shiver while picking up the ball with his eyes, that's still PI even though he got his head around. And if he doesn't touch him, I don't care where his head is. So that was a really, really bad call. And pass interference in general is another thing I've said, and there's actually, like, knuckleheads who argue that this is a good thing, but spot foul for PI is the worst rule in sports. Like, there is no way you should give out a spot foul for these calls. Now, that play to Evans was pretty long, but it wasn't even one of the longer ones. But you'll see on some of these deep balls, and, you know, there's some minimal contact, and again, pass interference is very subjective and very hard to call correctly, and yet we just hand out, yeah, here's a 60-yard penalty. They just launched the ball downfield. Now you kind of pushed them. Take the ball at the spot like you would have caught it. Like, just, you know, like the college rule is so much better. 15 yards, still very penal, still a first down, but you can't be handing out spot fouls for this. And for the knuckleheads who say, oh, well, if they make it a 15-yard penalty, then they're just going to tackle them every time they get beat, dude. Like, everybody knows that. You got to make it a spot. I don't know if maybe you've never watched college football if you're saying that, but college football has had this rule for ages, and there is no issue with, like, people. There's not some epidemic of people tackling receivers because they know it's only a 15-yard penalty. Guys still don't want to commit a penalty. And so it just doesn't work that way. It's very, very naive to believe that, to be quite honest with you. But anyway, that's a whole other rant. In this case, it did benefit the Bucks. It did set them up, and they did end up scoring the game-winning touchdown, and I don't fault them for it. And it was great to hear the cannon. I was at home. I wasn't at the game, but, you know, I talked about this on Twitter. I think it was back during the Monday night game. You know, I can hear. I live in South Tampa. I live 4 miles as the crow flies from Raymond James Stadium. So when I don't go to the game, when I'm at home for the games, I can hear the cannon even from 4 miles away when something happens. I hear boom, 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 like in the distance. You can hear it even from South Tampa. So then I got to wondering, because I was like, you know, watching on TV. Actually, it was the Monday night game. And I was watching on TV, and I noticed that I heard the cannons on TV, then I heard them here. And it's funny, because TV is on like a 5 second delay if you have regular cable, maybe even a little more than that. And if you watch on any type of streaming, it's like 30 seconds or a minute, which is one of the reasons I don't like streaming, because I don't like the delay being that long. So I was wondering, like, how, if it's already on delay anyway, how am I still hearing it on TV before I hear it in person? Obviously, the sound has to be created in real life for it to go on TV. But then I forgot the old lightning and thunder rule. Like, I live 4 miles from the stadium, so 5 seconds for every mile is how much faster, or is how fast sound travels. So if something takes 5 seconds to reach you, it's a mile away. Being 4 miles away, it takes 20 seconds for sound to reach my house. So even if my TV's on a 10, 15 second delay, I'll hear the cannon there first, and then a few seconds later, I'll run out to my porch. And I did this when Perriman scored the touchdown. I went and opened my front door real quick, and I did. I heard boom, 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 like all the cannons going off after the Bucks won. So that's always nice. And it's, I get the flyovers over my house too a lot of times, which is always fun. And we'll see it again on Sunday night. I know a lot of Bucks fans that were there on Sunday. You know, it was a big game. Everybody was geeked up. Even when the schedule came out way back earlier in the year, everyone was circling this game saying, this is going to be one of the biggest games of the season. It's going to be one of the biggest tickets of the season. And a lot of people I know that went to the game, and again, just hearing people on Twitter and stuff like that, all said they were disappointed. Like, the crowd was really, really heavily Buffalo, more so than they expected. And it's become like a talking point this week. Like, people, even Rick Stroud and Greg Allman have gotten in on the act, like addressing fans' concerns. Because a lot of people were really upset with how many Bills fans there were. And if you're like me and you grew up around here, you know, going way back, again, to the 80s, 90s, whatever. I mean, that was a way of life. Anytime we played the Bears, anytime we played the Packers, I mean, it was insane. And it was even more than what you saw on Sunday with Buffalo. I remember 1997, like when the Bucks first were good, basically, the first time they were good since like the early 80s, and that huge Bucks-Packers game, you know, was going to decide the NFC South. Brett Favre was coming in. And, you know, I thought, okay, this time it's going to be better. Like, it's going to be a bunch of Bucks fans because we're good now. You know, it used to just be we were bad and the Northern fans would take over. But that game had more Packers fans than any Bucks-Packers game I can remember. There was so many of them. And it's just the way it was. And it's the same with baseball, with the Red Sox and the Yankees. Not as bad now, but that's because nobody likes to go out there, let alone, you know, Yankees or Red Sox fans. But, it's just normal to me. So I didn't think it was that big. Now, I wasn't at the game Sunday. I was at home. But, you know, the Buffalo fans, they're a different breed. And they didn't just do this in Tampa. They do this pretty much for all of the Bills road games, especially the ones that are in nice places. Some of them do travel down from up there. Many, many more of them live either here or as somewhere in Florida. It's not a far road trip, you know, whether you live in Orlando, Jacksonville, South Florida, whatever it is. You know, there are a lot of people from New York, whether it be upstate New York or whether it be the New York City metro area, Boston, you name it, you know, there's people living in Florida all over the place from up there. So a lot of them don't even have to travel. They live here already. I didn't think, I mean, on TV it did sound like pretty loud, but I didn't think it sounded that bad. But again, maybe that's just because I'm used to it. But a lot of Johnny-come-lately Bucks fans, which we have a lot of, maybe weren't around for some of the old days, they probably don't understand. They probably think it's weird that we have this many people from other teams rooting against the Bucks. And it doesn't happen that much now. You know, I don't think it happened that much at the Bears game. The Bears aren't very good, but even if we played the Packers here, there'd always be some, but not as many as there were in the 90s and 80s or things like that. But, if, you know, especially with Buffalo being good, and especially with them not being here very often, they only come here every 8 years, you know, I'm not going to react as strongly to that. But I'm used to it. And I always took it as a badge of honor as a Tampa sports fan because, you know, this is a place where a lot of people want to be, whether they want to visit or whether they want to live here. You know, people say, oh, well, you don't see this sort of thing in Green Bay or Buffalo or Cleveland. Well, yeah, no shit. I mean, people from here aren't moving to Cleveland or Buffalo or Green Bay. You know, those people move here. That's the whole point. We have a very desirable place that we live. It's paradise. I love it. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. So I don't mind having Yankee fans or Red Sox fans or Packers or Bills fans or Bears fans, whoever it is. Or if you go to Lightning games, you know, you get some Toronto folks and some of the other Canadians. Fine, hey, come on down. We wouldn't be who we are. I'll be the first one to say it as a native of this area, okay? We wouldn't be who we are without transplants. And, in a way, I kind of, feel like it's getting too big now because Tampa, what I always love about Tampa and the Tampa Bay area is that it's got all the amenities of a big metro area. We've got the sports teams. We got, you know, all the concerts come through here. You know, there's things to do, shows, museums, you know, nightlife, restaurants. So you get all that without actually feeling like it's not a concrete jungle. Cost of living is not that bad here. You know, people say traffic, but traffic here is not actually as bad as a lot of metro areas. I would put Tampa up against both Orlando and South Florida in terms of traffic. So, I mean, yeah, you have to deal with some traffic, but I don't think it's terrible compared to other places. And so you get all the good things about, you know, having not too huge of a town. And, of course, you combine that with all the amenities of a big city that we do have. Combine that with a low cost of living. Combine that with being able to play golf year-round, beaches. I mean, it's December right now. I'm recording this on Thursday. I'm going to go get on my bike and pick my kids up from school in short sleeves, gorgeous weather. We don't have to bundle up and trudge through the snow to get to and from school. Tampa Bay has everything. People, mock Tampa Bay, like some of the northern people or the media or whatever, sometimes, and I just laugh. Hey, tell all these other people, because I'll tell you what, it's getting bigger and bigger and we're running out of space. Tell all of them that they're supposed to be making fun of Tampa not moving here, but I don't think your message is going to get through because I don't think there's any stopping it now. So don't, you know, I know it's annoying when you're at a Bucks fan and you hear all that. Nobody wants to hear that. You want the stadium just, you know, 100% on your side. But from someone who grew up here, was born and raised here, take it as a badge of honor. I don't get too upset. And it's really fun to me to be at a game and just have people in general. Obviously, you want them rooting for the Bucks, but it beats not having anybody at all. And I know Bucks season tickets, you know, a lot of season ticket holders are getting criticized because they had to have sold these tickets, right? I mean, it's not like you could buy single game tickets this year. So, yeah, there were some Bucks season ticket holders that definitely made a lot of money. You know, I mean, if you got Bills fans, and these people are fervent, okay? So, you can charge them $1,000 and they're going to give you the money. Maybe some people paid for their season tickets by just selling that one game. Again, not what I would do, but I can't fault them. Whenever I have tickets for a game extra, I either sell them for the exact same price I paid for them, or if they were given to me, I give them away. I've done that a few times where I've walked up to somebody outside the stadium, and not just for games nobody cared about, for big games. And I've said, hey, I got two. You need these? And they looked at me like I'm the nicest person ever. I did them this huge favor. And I'm like, well, I didn't pay for them, so don't worry about it. And they're like, oh, let me give you something. I'm like, no, if I paid for them, you could pay me that. But I don't look at tickets as a money-making opportunity. That to me is not how I've ever felt about it. And I've been on both sides of it, trying to scalp tickets to go to games and having extras myself. It never sat well with me. If you give me tickets for $20 and then I don't need them, maybe I'll sell them for $20 or I'll give them. But I'm not going to sell, ooh, I got this for $20, let me sell it for $80. You know, I don't feel right about that. It's not like playing the stock market. But for some people it is. And again, I'm not going to judge anybody. But if you're a Bucks fan, if you're a Bucks season ticket holder, yeah, it's always nice if you can find Bucks fans to sell them to. They may not offer to pay as much as somebody from Buffalo might, who this is a special event for. But, you know, from my perspective, I wanted to go to the game Sunday afternoon, and I would have gone. But I was not, and I don't have season tickets right now, I was not willing to pay, because you can go online and get them. I mean, right now, you can go online and get Sunday night tickets. Just because the game's sold out doesn't mean you can't get them. But, you know, they do that Ticketmaster Exchange or StubHub or any of these websites. You can do it that way, or you can even go down the line further on Craigslist or whatever. I wasn't going to pay $200, $250 for that. That's just me. So if you want to bring even one person, if I want to take my son, that's a $500, $600. I wasn't doing that. I just didn't, you know, it wasn't that important. I'm going to go to some games, but I'm not going to necessarily feel like I have to pay that much. And I do intend to buy season tickets again. I just didn't get them this year because they sold out faster than I thought they would. And that's fine. I mean, I probably wouldn't have used all eight games anyway, so it's easier just to spend the money in certain spots. But hey, it is what it is, man. And people can, if it's their ticket, they can do whatever they want. But just be glad we live in a place, you know, that people want to come to and people want to live in and visit, because that's the number one thing I take away from it that's a sign of. So I don't think it'll be as big of a problem on Sunday night, although the Saints do have a fan base of their own. They're having a redout, by the way. We don't usually do these types of things, but we're doing it this time. So they're asking everybody who's going to the game to either wear red, but you'll also be handed, every single person, all 65,000 and change, will be handed a red t-shirt, red buck shirt, upon entering the stadium. And it won't be like laying on all the seats. You'll be given it. It'll be given to you as you walk in. So if nothing else, like that's, I have two of those shirts, giveaway shirts. I have one that I caught, you know, how they shoot them out of the cannon sometimes. When they play the pirate song during certain breaks in the action, they throw all the beads, but they used to stuff some t-shirts into the cannons. I'm not sure if they still do. And I caught one of those one time. And then I have another one that somebody threw off the Bucks float at Gasparilla a few years back. So I got two of those comp red Bucks t-shirts. It'll be something similar to that. I think it's going to have Publix or something on the back. But, you know, they're good for around the house or whatever. And, you know, non-formal. I have formal wear t-shirts because I almost never wear a collar if I can help it. So I call dress t-shirts. And then I've got regular t-shirts. So they're good for a regular t-shirt. As far as the actual game, I mean, I've given up trying to compare anything with a Bucks-Saints game because these games never really seem, however your season's going with the Bucks-Saints, it's weird. This game usually goes the other way. I remember all those years when the Bucks were bad. I remember the Saints. In fact, the only team still to win the Super Bowl and lose to the Bucks in the same season was the 2009 Saints, who had that stunning upset loss at home to the Bucks. Who, what were they in 2009? Like, I can't remember what it was, like 4-12 or something like that. And then the year the Bucks won the Super Bowl the first time in 2002, the Saints swept both of those somehow. Last season, same type of thing, until the Bucks went on there and went in the playoffs. And in fact, I think Todd Bowles' two worst defensive performances for Todd Bowles' defenses at home since this coaching staff took over have been two Bucks-Saints games where the Saints scored 34 points plus. And so you never do quite know, but this is a game the Buccaneers should win, especially given the history and how hard they've been trying and not been able to beat the Saints in the regular season in some time. And if you look at the situation right now in the NFC, you know, obviously we talked about the South. If they win, they clinch. But you've got now, since Arizona lost on Monday night, three teams, all 10-3. Now, the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. The Bucs did not play the Cardinals or the Packers in this regular season, although the Packers do have the win over the Cardinals. But in event of a three-way tie or any type of tie where there's no head-to-head game and you're not in the same division, of course, it's conference record. The Packers have two NFC losses. The Bucs and Cardinals have three. All three teams are 10-3. However, remaining schedule has to factor in, too. If you believe in any of those, you know, odds to win type things or the percentages, you know, they run the simulations, all that stuff, and you see the Bucks have a 50-something percent chance or whatever it is, you know. If you believe in all that stuff, the Bucks actually do have the highest percentage probability to win the South. That's just based on the four remaining games all three teams have, as the Bucks, as we know, have the Saints on Sunday night at home. Then they go to Carolina, go to the Jets, then Carolina at home. So none of their teams left that they would play have a winning record, and even the Saints game is the only one that looks even a bit daunting. And then for Green Bay, on the other hand, they go to Baltimore this Sunday, then Cleveland and Minnesota at home before they go to Detroit in Week 18. Still feels weird to say Week 18. But anyway, whatever we need Green Bay to have happen to them is probably going to have to happen the final 3 weeks, because I doubt you can rely on Detroit for much in Week 18. But that's still three losable games. I mean, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Minnesota are all challenging games. And the same thing with Arizona. They also get Detroit. That's this weekend. So again, I wouldn't count on much there. But then after that, they have Indianapolis at home, at Dallas, and Seattle at home. So of the three teams that are tied, the Bucks have the easiest remaining four games. It's hard to say what it will take to win this division, but, or excuse me, to win the number one seed. And of course, remember, there are 7 playoff teams now, not 6. So it used to be number 1 and 2 got first round byes. Now it's only number 1. And beyond that, of course, besides just the bye, if you're the number 1 seed, you will not have to go anywhere but right down the street to beautiful Raymond James Stadium for your playoff game. And so these are all things to consider right now. Oh, and don't forget the Rams and the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys are a game behind the Bucks, but the Bucks have a head-to-head win over them, so that's essentially 2 games, a little bit less to worry about. But then you've got the Rams, who could still win the NFC West and catch Arizona, and the Rams are a game behind the Bucks as well, but the Rams do have the tiebreaker head-to-head over the Bucks. So if the Rams and Bucks somehow finish tied, then the Rams, there's a lot of ways this could go right now. Obviously, you need to take care of business every single week, and you want to think you're going to go 4-0 the rest of the way. And with that schedule, you know, you have a good opportunity to try and do it, but we all know better, having seen some of the crazier things that happen in the NFL all the time, let alone with just the Bucks, or the Bucks and the Saints, for that matter. But that's all on the line in the next 4 weeks, and, you know, we'll know more with each passing week. So, can we give it up? Let's clap it up for the Saturday games. We got 2 Saturday games this week in the NFL, so hats off for that, because every year when college football season ends, you know, it's always a tough Saturday, that final Saturday. Army-Navy was last week, and that's always fun and everything. But let's be honest, when those conference championship games take place, that final full Saturday of college football, even though we're still a ways off from the end of football season, I always get a little bit sad, and I'm like, whoa, hang on a second. This is really sad, like there are no more Saturdays of college football. But then the NFL swoops right in like a knight in shining armor to save it, and bless their heart, we've got actually decent games too. We got Raiders and Browns at 4:30 on Saturday, and we got Patriots-Colts at 8:20 on Saturday night. That's all I need, baby. Just give me a couple. Now you just filled up from 4:30 all the way to almost midnight. We're covered. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm not saying I'm not going to do anything Saturday except that. I've got a family and people, and you know. But at least I know it's there. And you know, we all know it's there. And then Sunday still has your full slate. And so, great job there by the NFL to get those Saturday games going, which they should always do whenever there is no college football. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can get me at bobbygameday. Oh, well, one final thing before I go. I just wanted to mention the Urban Meyer thing. Of course, he's been fired as the head coach of the Jags in the past couple days. And I talked about it on a few shows ago. I can't remember how long ago it was, but this was back when he was, I can't even remember which story. There's been so many stories of negativity coming out, whether it was ex-player saying things. I think a player's dad said something. All the different stories of just how, I mean, Urban Meyer, and the latest one, if you missed it, was Josh Lambeau, the former Jags kicker who'd been having a rough go of things and had missed a bunch of kicks, was warming up and stretching, and Urban Meyer came up to him and kicked him and said, "Hey, dipshit, make your effing kicks." Now, that might, I would have had to have been standing right there to know how big of a deal that was. You know, how hard did he kick him, blah, blah, blah. Lambeau took exception to it, said, "Did you just kick me? Don't ever kick me again." Urban Meyer supposedly replied, "I'm the head coach, I can do whatever I want." And this is coming off the heels of the other story the other day about how he belittled his assistants in front of the team and said, "These guys are losers, you got to listen to me. I've won things, you guys haven't won anything." Just really, you know what Urban Meyer is? And I don't mean this in the like the sarcastic, like ha-ha type of way. Like, Urban Meyer is a sociopath. Like, he really, I mean that completely literally. He is a sociopath. Like, he is programmed to do one thing. He's like a robot. He's a football coach. He's programmed to be the boss. He's programmed to call the shots and not have anybody question him. And what did I say a few shows ago? I mean, he basically can't adjust and can't function in a world where he doesn't have agency over the players like he did in college. And the very idea that the players are also adults and that there has to be mutual respect beyond just, you know, cog in the machine versus the big-time employer or executive. I mean, that's the dynamic, Urban Meyer. And it's not just him, but he can't make that adjustment. And he's a total sociopath. Like, he doesn't understand, like, the way normal people do things. I'm convinced of that. I mean, you're hearing some of these stories. Like, I don't think he could function as a normal person. It's just the way he is. And it's weird because you know, it's a little unsettling if you look back at, like, if you're a Gator fan like I am, University of Florida. And since Steve Spurrier left in 2001, the Gators have had, what is it now, with Napier, who I'm excited about, by the way. He's like the sixth or seventh, I think, head coach since then. And Napier hasn't coached a game yet. But of all the other coaches, the Gators have had no success with anybody except Urban Meyer. And so it's like got me thinking, like, does it take that kind of a guy? Like, can you have a normal human being who's just good at their job go be, you know, like a good head coach, be successful? Because I think Saban seems like a pretty well-adjusted guy. And all these coaches, obviously, they're intense guys. A lot of them are type A. But Saban doesn't strike me as, like, some weirdo. And, you know, I don't know. Like, Urban Meyer's a messed up person, okay? And I know a lot of Gator fans who can't stand him. And I always had a softer stance on him than most Gator fans. I don't know if they have short memories, but I remember 2006, 2008, that entire run of two national championships. And if you go all the way to 2009, the appearances in the SEC championship game, I would say outside of the Bucks, like 2002, 1997, I would say my happiest memories as a sports fan are those Gator teams. I had met my girlfriend. She was still living in Gainesville going to dental school there, and I was going up for the home games every weekend, and we went on the road trip, and I went to like 9 games in one season out of like 12 when you combine home and road, and I just had so much fun, and Urb made that happen, okay? That was because of Urban Meyer, and not just obviously him, but the recruiting classes he put together, and Ron Zook too before him that had recruited a lot of those guys. But my point is, at that point, and this is before we knew all the things that were going on, I was ready to declare him, you know, like, for sainthood. I was going to nominate him for sainthood. I was like, this guy, you know? And then obviously we came out later, he turned out to be a lunatic. He had the stuff with checking out, saying he couldn't handle the pressure. And I'm not criticizing him for that part, but I mean, you know, then we later learned about the behavior of guys like Aaron Hernandez and some other of those members of those Gator teams. And obviously it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. But I know most of those Gator fans that say they hate Urban Meyer wouldn't trade the rings. But now that he made this move to the NFL and looked completely unequipped for it, it really does go to show how different the dynamic is between player and coach in college versus the NFL, or any level really below the NFL, where the guys are well, like, if you think of like just a ladder, you're well below the coach on the ladder. Whereas in the NFL, you're all kind of employees. You have different roles, like the coach is the boss, but really the owner is the boss, and the coach has his role, and the players have their roles, and they're all adults, and they all need to respect each other and treat each other like adults, which Urban Meyer seems completely incapable of doing, and even to his own assistant coaches, let alone the players. So the guy's a weirdo, doesn't seem like a good guy. That doesn't mean you can't be a good football coach. In fact, sometimes it's a prerequisite to be a good football coach, but in this case, that's pretty much that. Now, will he ever coach again? Hey, we'll see. I don't really care one way or the other, but I could see college. He won't coach again in the NFL. I could see college coaches definitely looking past all of this stuff if they think he can deliver him a 12-1 season. And honestly, he probably can if he ever decides to try that again. But I don't think, here's what I don't think. People say, oh, well, here's another example. College coaches, they just can't succeed in the NFL. It's just you can't hire a college coach. I don't think that's true. I think overall, if you look at NFL head coaches in general, what's the success rate of first-time head coaches? I mean, it's not good for any of them. Most NFL head coaches, you know, finally get their shot after being assistants, whether it's college or pro, and then, you know, they don't do that well. They get fired, and they go back to being coordinators or whatever. I don't think it's a college thing. Now, if you look back, what college coaches have been successful? Yeah, there aren't a ton. I mean, I would argue Pete Carroll. Although Pete Carroll had NFL experience before going to USC, so then he wasn't just a college coach when he came back to the NFL. Jimmy Johnson's the most obvious one, who won national championships at Miami and then went and did the same thing with the Cowboys. His replacement with the Cowboys, Barry Switzer, did the same thing coming from college, although I would argue, I don't know if Barry Switzer actually did much to lead those teams to the Super Bowl. As well as, I think they just won in spite of him or just independent of him. And he just happened to be the guy coaching him. So I don't know if he's a good example. But he won. Cliff Kingsbury right now is having some success as the Cardinals head coach. So I don't think being a college... What I'm just saying basically is I don't think it matters that you're a college coach or not a college. I think coaches in general being hired in the NFL for the first time have low rates of success. I don't think you're any more or less likely to be successful as a head coach if you're coming out of college, even though there's definitely a stigma that people have attached to that, saying, oh, this guy's a college coach. And even Saban, I don't think Saban was bad with the Dolphins, and Saban's biggest mistake, honestly, was passing on Drew Brees because he was worried about his shoulder injury, and that changed the course of all NFL history, not just the Dolphins. Honestly, that one decision changed a lot of things, both in the NFL and college, because if he goes with Brees, who knows if the Dolphins don't end up being wildly successful, and Saban, and maybe Saban never goes to Alabama, and maybe college football looks completely different right now. I mean, it's the butterfly effect, right? Like, how many things look different? But I wouldn't ever say, this guy's a college coach, I'm not considering him, or I don't think he can cut it because he's coming from college to the NFL. I really just think if you got like 10, 20% odds of something happening, that's the way it is. I mean, you got plenty of Gus Bradleys or Rich Kotites, or I'm just picking random names. I'm not ragging on those guys. But you can look at Dirk Cutters if you want to look closely here. You can go down the list of all the new NFL head coaches over the years and how many of them actually last more than a few years and are successful, and it's not very high. So, and a lot of them were less nutty than Urban Meyer was. But anyway, good riddance to him. And we'll see if that affects the Bucs as much as what happens with Byron Leftwich and if they end up showing any interest there. But I don't think anything's going to happen in the immediate future with that. There is some time. And the rule is different now, by the way. Coaches can be interviewed even in the final 2 weeks of the regular season now for other jobs, whereas before everything had to happen after the regular season ended. So we'll keep an eye on that. But in the meantime, Bucs Saints Sunday night. Enjoy those primetime lights, baby. It's the last one of the regular season. Of course, we'll see. You know, there are playoff games that are going to be in primetime on the Monday nighter they have now, plus the Saturday nighter and all that. And so there's still a lot that remains to be seen. But in the meantime, Bucs Saints Sunday night, 8:20. Weather should be pretty nice out there, and it'll be a lot of fun at Raymond James Stadium. I will be here next week. I'm not sure what's going on with Christmas. Maybe I'll try and get a show in earlier in the week or something like that. But like I said, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Get me on Twitter @BobbyGameDay. I'll be back next week. Thanks to our good friends at Young Bull Athletics, our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, allowing me to get in front of all of you. The number one place anywhere on the internet or TV or radio for Bucs coverage. JoeBucsFan.com. Most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Have fun. Get ready for the holiday weekend coming up next week. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.